Good evening. Does everybody know everybody? Has everybody met Matt? I guess so. We are on the ninth precept, but I thought I would ask how you did, if you thought any at all, about the eighth precept that we talked about last week. The not being stingy about a single thing. Sounds like one of those that, oh sure, I don't tell lies, I'm not stingy, and then go home and find out just how stingy I really am. these are all sometimes painful to encounter. And I don't know if you all had time to even think about it, but I thought I would open it up for that if you did. Ellie?
I discovered that I was being very stingy with my time, and I had, on Sunday, we had some social, small things, but I really didn't want to meet them. I wanted to stay home and work in my garden. And I really struggled with my, I really felt how ungenerous I was being. I wasn't very comfortable feeling actually to be so aware of it. And I really learned a lot from both of the things that I did on Sunday. I mean, they were really very sweet, as it turned out, in their own way. But I think partly because it had been such a struggle for me. I was going to do them anyway. It was just the lack of generosity that I was feeling towards doing them.
Yes, if you go somewhere gritting your teeth because you don't want to be there.
I was being kind of like a rebellious teenager. I really felt myself how I must have seemed to my parents at times.
That's a great example.
but I don't think I would have focused in on it as much if I had been working on this. So it was really quite helpful.
Gave you a couple of good times.
It gave me a slightly deeper and different feeling about the people that I saw that day.
Ah.
And so that was very precious.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Sharon?
Actually, I didn't remember to think about it, but I was thinking about something kind of similar this week. And I think in some ways I'm stingy to myself. And my father sometimes used the expression, because the rabbi used it, and I've come to really detest his expression, probably from overuse, because sometimes if my father asked his rabbi once whether he did some certain thing, and the rabbi's answer was, well, it's not for me. So now my father keeps, when I'm trying to get him to go to the little prayer group they have at the place where it is, which is a Jewish place, he says, oh, it's not for me. Oh, it's not for me. I'm like, but, and I think the reason that it started to bother me, I realized, was because, I've never had a lot of money, and so I've always, there was one period when I did, but other than that period of time, I'll go to a store and I'll see something that's kind of expensive, and I'll say to myself, well, that's really beautiful, but it's not for me. And now, especially I'm not working, but I have a certain amount of savings, and there are a couple of things I'd really like to do, but they're really expensive, and I tell myself, no, I can't do that. Whereas some people, you know, they'll spend down to zero. And which I'm not saying I should be doing, but I'm stingy with myself. I was thinking about that today. When I let myself go, I really want to go see Wicked. It's not like, you know, a life-saving, you know, moments here. This is the thing that is coming up around, you know, which is kind of a splurge for me. So, but I'm stingy with this.
I think many of us are. I'm certainly that way too. And I talked to a friend not long ago who came into some money when her mother died, and she's living exactly the same as if she didn't have any more money. And she's really not very comfortable. She's in a very small place, and she's far from the things she loves. She loves rivers and the ocean, and she could live right on the ocean if she wanted to. Now, oh, she said, I could. Oh, I shouldn't do that. And, you know, so I think we just set ourselves up, our limitations, and forget how to take care of ourselves very well, in a way. So I think if we're too serious and too stingy, that it affects the quality of our life. Not that we can just throw it all to the winds, but there's something in between that's very nice. I have a friend who always said, never on Sunday. She's stingy all week, but never on Sunday. You can't do too much harm on one day of the week. Me too.
So I was thinking a lot about how you said that part of this is allowing other people the opportunity to be generous. Mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. But there's someone close to me who I was upset was not sharing with me. And I was very upset about this, and of course, to make it worse, I decided I was not going to share with this person. So, you know, I just made it all.
Yes.
So much worse. And so, but somehow when you're talking about the giving other person, and when the other person sort of became me, and because it was so frustrating to not share, because I wanted to share, that's why I wanted the other person to share, so that I could share, and then I just, like, locked it. In the past week, I did more of that, and it was good. I guess it opened it up again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care anymore with the care now. And now I get to share.
It's all up here. It's just all the funny thinking that we do about something. It seems so real, but we're just making up all these complicated stories. That's a good example, too. Julian?
In terms of, like, this complicated thinking that happens, like, sometimes it feels like it's, well, the connection between that kind of erratic thinking, so to speak, because if you think about it, it is pretty erratic how we come in.
Yeah.
The possibility of that being kind of not just like, but more of I think there's more things going on than like the words passing through our heads concocting these plots or whatever. Mm-hmm. Rationalizations. There's kind of a more amorphous kind of connection to it. Maybe like I guess the closest thing, maybe like emotional state, or maybe like I don't know. I think it. I don't know, because like when you're overcome by like something strong, for example, like anger or sadness or whatever, like that feels like the whole shebang, that scope. It's hard to be aware of that sometimes. And just trying to manipulate words rather than kind of being aware of
the whole. Yes. And we're very eager to act, often when we shouldn't.
That grabbing state is
painful. Yeah. It's often when we're swept by emotion, the very best thing is not to do anything until it's gone by, and then come back to whatever the situation is and face it. Because otherwise, we really turn into idiots, you know, when we're swept by emotion. We just don't make sense. And we aren't able to see the other, which is what causes whatever it is in the first place. We see something out there and project on it, and it creates something in so-called in us, though the whole thing is inside of us from beginning to end. So it's hard to see that when we're all upset and trying to make them do what we want them to do. Yeah.
As far as this week goes, I have a personal I was in a crappy mood, but I sat down. I mean, it's amazing how it just kind of, I don't know, just goes, it's not, and then you go with these, like, oh, I'm a bad person for thinking this, or you know, whatever, but it just goes, and it wasn't
real to start with.
Yeah,
it's a mercy. Ron?
I'm a very cryptic person. I like to say that the Scots are the only people who are more thrifty than the Chinese, and I'm part Scotch. But, you know, thinking about this, this is very complicated. It, on the surface of it, it seems very complicated. Because you could say you're being stingy about not spending money, or you could say you're stingy about not sharing with others, but that wouldn't necessarily refer to material things. It could be just giving of your compassion or your feeling, or somebody wants your time for whatever reason. It might be they just need somebody to talk to, or they're asking for something, and we often, you know, just give you. I don't know, I would just get irritated, or not necessarily show my irritation, but pretty much withdraw that. But and that can also extend to people giving things to you. I have some friends who I think are excessively generous. One guy was manic depressive, and when he's mad at me, he's just beyond non-stingy, totally irresponsible.
Yeah.
Try to give, you know, presents that are more expensive than you really ought to give, but and I'll sort of grudgingly take them and then make some comment, well, you would have spent too much money. But now I won't do that anymore, because that's, unless it's totally crazy, like he's giving away his house, that's his. There's something about, you know, by accepting something, you're giving something back.
Exactly.
And I know the Chinese have a lot of philosophy about this, giving gifts and accumulating a type of virtue by not only giving, but if somebody offers you something by taking that. So I just, now I'm thinking it boils down to non-attachment to some extent. It's just situations and transactions, be they material or emotional or spiritual, you have to you can look at them in a really sense of, with a sense of equanimity, you know. Not with all, one way or another, and that's it. It's going on. And yeah. I didn't think about this all week. I probably was thinking more about saving money. But that's a hard thing to overcome. But, you know, I suppose a monk would just give everything away and have absolutely no attachments.
Yeah. It's hard to do in a society where there's no provision for someone like that.
And, you know, you look at it from a, you have a family or something, how should you look at it?
Yes.
And is it really...
That's not...
limit on it.
Yeah.
But don't be attached. You know, it's sort of like when we eat, we give thanks for our food, but we still eat our food. You know? I think that appreciating what we have in life.
Yes.
And not being so attached to it. Is simple, wonderful because we have it, or, you know, cursed because we have it.
Yeah.
That's sort of what I'm thinking.
Thank you. You know, in Japan, they're the same. They give presents. If you go somewhere, you always bring a present. And if someone comes to visit, they always bring a present. And at one of the temples where we stayed, we brought some, you bring towels, little towels and things, and the wife of the priest opened up her closet and showed me, and it's shelves and shelves of little towels that they've been given, still in their box with a ribbon around it, all ready to give to somebody else when they go somewhere. So it has meaning but no use. Accept generously. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Accept generously. Yes.
And give generously.
And give generously. The giving is easy to think about, but accepting generously is a little harder to conceive.
Harder for me, especially something I really didn't want in the first place, and I didn't want.
Yeah.
But you know, that's yeah. very hard to also show appreciation, you know, without some hope. Thank you. Say, really, thank you. That was a real lesson.
Me too.
Well, two things. One is that, you know, I shared my story, and it could be about sharing it, but it could be about things or ideas or time, and the way I said it. It's all the same thing, and I think things and not things are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Same action. For giving something or your time or whatever. What I was going to say is I have that same issue. I don't like things, specific things. and I think mostly because I get overwhelmed with them and I don't do them. And my mom, it took too long to figure this out. My mom shows me how to give things, and especially she's really far away. And so it was a big struggle. I mean, like, fight all the time because I didn't want the thing. And then, we'd actually done it and helped me with this. She's like, well, it's just a thing. You know, it's just that thing. The other stuff, you communicate, like Ron's saying, you give and receive, but then it's a thing. Because that's what would happen. I was like, well, now my mom gave me this thing, so I have to do something with it. But you don't.
You put it in a closet
and give
it away.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's so much freedom in that, and so I've been practicing that, and it is free. So if someone gives you something, you accept it, and then maybe the time will come to give it to someone mm-hmm. else, something that you're not going to use, or use it for a little bit, and then give it off.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
I had a tiny little bronze figure of a Bodhi leaf curled up with a little tiny Buddha sitting on it. And it was given to me by Joyce. Donalyn brought her over, and Joyce had this little beautiful thing that Coben had given to her. And then Michael came to visit me, and I had it out on the foyer so it could be easily seen, even though it's so tiny. And Michael came to visit, and he said, I made that years ago, and I gave it to Coben. He said, Coben gave it away. Oh, dear. So then when it was time for Jane to go away, I thought, what has the Sangha in it more than this little tiny Buddha? And it's so small she could actually take it with her. So I hope it's with her now. So it's just going on and on and on.
And I wanted to say that I was that I was so afraid that my mom would get offended that I didn't come away, but I never asked her. You know, she wasn't around, so she, you know, but I was, if she ever comes, this is that, whatever. I don't even know, it's nothing like valuable, it's just stuff. But then she was like, oh, you can give it away, I don't care. I was like, can I give it to the thrift store? Sure. Well, if you're not going to use it, I don't want you to, like, have it around. So it's, you know,
we make up problems that aren't there. Yeah. That's beautiful. So much work. We work so hard. We don't have to.
Well, I was teaching a class that had a lot of older Asian women in it, mostly Chinese and some various and sundry other Asian people, and of course those are the ones who were always giving gifts, and you know, so I have a lot of tea, green tea and some scarves, and they're very nice, but you also get to learn how to be gracious about accepting a gift, because I got a couple of things that were, I didn't know what they were, but you know, you just say thank you so much, or it's beautiful, or something, but then I got one that was a real lesson in how do you say thank you graciously. Because it was these, it was like a kid. If you imagine, you know, it was like a bunch of seashells kind of glued together in different forms. You know, very cute. But you know, it was like almost like obviously an amateurish kind of, you know, thing. You know, you could see the glue, and it was all. But you know, but they were cute. And so you know, I put them on my list. Oh, isn't this cute? And everybody said, oh yeah, that's so cute. You know, like. Whatever, you know, thank you so much, but you know, now, like, I don't even know that I could give this to Goodwill. One broke, so I had an excuse to throw it away, and I really don't have room to display, you know. But in terms of accepting it, though, you know, I really just had to say, you know, thank you so much, and really appreciate, I mean, because I really did appreciate the gifts that I would get from the class, and so I could just think of it as part of that, and enjoy receiving it, no matter what I decide to do with it later on.
Do you remember the era at Jikoji when we were first beginning and we asked for donations, and we got the most incredible, the most amazing one was, that I remember, is a broken toilet seat that someone brought up. A lot of useless junk ended up, and we said, oh, thank you so much. You're so generous.
I don't remember that
part.
Kind of rude.
No, I think they thought we could fix it if we were desperate. Well, no, you don't say no, you just put it aside. The Japanese way is to say yes to everything and never say no. But find a way to get rid of it quick.
Those Japanese, you know, finger things that have, like, you know, you listen, you put your fingers.
Yes.
So when they put their fingers and you slap them in the face.
Oh, right.
I think the reason we don't say no, because, you know, I've been saying no all the time, but is that that's maybe all they have to give. They want
yes.
to give, and we're
yes.
depriving people of that act of giving.
Yes. And Jikoji was set up in order to be open to everyone and to receive whatever there was to receive in the hopes that it had something to give in exchange. And people felt that, even though they didn't, you know. It was obvious. Still is. Still is that way. Yes, Matt.
As I listen to everyone speak and I reflect on my own experience is in reality and in my mind, I think that this whole discussion makes me think about how hard it is for me to open others. This whole idea of letting this gift and not feeling obligated or threatened or how am I going to get rid of this thing or how am I going to accept it and not feel guilty. I think it's really hard for me to just open up and just let this person in. Because I feel like it's really not about the material gift, it's about how can I enter into this relationship moment with this other person.
So. That's exactly right. That's the essence of all of these precepts. It's all about our relationship with others. Yeah. And the various ways that we try not to have one.
Yeah.
It's hard because we don't even notice it a lot of the time.
Yeah.
We just protect ourselves so carefully and for all the reasons that our childhood has given us usually. That it's very hard to even see what we do. And I think that's the most important thing. It's just like Ellie was saying, if you can't see it, you don't know it's there. Yeah, thank you. That's exactly right. Russ?
Well, I got one closing point. Since I grew up in front of a television set in New York City, I was raised by a TV. I think your father's rabbi got that line from Jack Benny. It's not, he's no comedian.
No, this rabbi is younger.
Maybe watches the
room. Well, he's so bad, so
well, let me talk about anger a little bit in the last 5 minutes. I always call this everybody's favorite precept. It's one of the three poisons, the so-called three poisons, or the three hindrances, greed and hatred and delusion. Actually, anger isn't quite the same as hatred. There are a number of words for where did I hide that? So there's anger, hatred, ill will, and aversion. And you can taste the flavor of each one. Each one is a little bit different. And what we say is hatred is an emotion of extreme dislike or aversion. Ill will is an evil feeling or intention towards someone else. And aversion is turning away, estrangement. So anger is that which pains or afflicts, or the feeling which it produces. The active feeling provoked against the agent, passion, rage, wrath, ire. So you can see it's got a lot of sides to it. It can have an intentional, hard, cold anger, which is considered in a legal sense, I think, that if you have that kind of intention and you kill somebody, it's a lot worse than if you kill somebody in a rush of anger, or if you accidentally, of course, kill somebody, that the hard, cold intention is malevolence and evil, you could say. But the anger that we talk about is more about this piece of weather that comes through us over and over, and jimmies up our relationship with everything and everybody. Some people have more of it and some people less. We all have it. It's built into us. And the way we understand it in our practice is that it cuts us off from everybody else. So the Bodhidharma version of it is, in the realm of selfless Dharma, not contriving reality for the self. As soon as you start thinking about yourself as something real that needs to be protected and defended against another self that's actually doing something toward you that you think is wrong, then you've created the situation in your mind and can be swept away and do great harm. So in a way, it's about self-importance, about considering that I against you, as one of the other ones talk about. I just read a couple of pages of Thich Nhat Hanh's new book about being in the now that Shambhala is peddling on the internet. And the very first thing that he talks about is how he suggests that we deal with anger, which is to hold it in our arms. Also our greed and our jealousy and all the other terrible things that plague us. So instead of trying to get rid of it, to be very aware of it and hold it and care for it. Our biggest challenge is how to live with each other. If you read the paper every day, you read more about how we don't live with each other, how we blow each other up. One of our greatest powers is to be able to relate. That's the huge invisible power that changes the world, wherever we go. So, I always think of anger as a kind of experience of a chasm or an abyss that opens up between me and somebody else. And then, instead of trying to cross it in a gentle way, sometimes the only way it seems that would work is just to keep screaming and shouting across, you know, and trying to get that one to understand. And of course, the more you scream and shout across an abyss, the more messed up it becomes, because there's no real communication. So I suggest that we notice when anger arises, because it always does, and notice what we do with it, where we put it and how we treat it. It's a part of us. It's really a valuable part in a way, because we need our gumption. We need to face hard things, and we need to be direct and autonomous about what we do. And sometimes that sounds like anger. It's really just crossing over and communicating directly, being willing to be with others, even when our weather is painful. And it is painful. It's painful for us. I don't know any more painful pain than anger. And for others. It works all the way around. So, that's enough, really. Patience. Patience is the antidote. That's one way of talking about it. Patience is the antidote. Sometimes we have to wait for that chasm to close by itself. And sometimes it takes a long, long time. I've noticed that in my life. There have been times when it took years. But it always closes. I do believe it always closes if we're patient and allow it to. Keep faith on our side. So it's 8 o'clock.